Joe, have you ever been to Austin?
Only once, and it was 106 degrees. I went in July.
That's the wrong time to go to Austin.
Yeah, but I got to hang out with the guys at 101 Commerce, get to go to CapCon, hang out with Ryan Daniel Moran, and a lot of good folks down in Austin.
There are a lot of good folks down in Austin, and that's why we are hosting a meetup at the end of May for getting everyone together that's down in Austin. When and where are we doing this meetup?
I will be at the Oasis on Lake Travis on May 29th from 6 to 9 p.m. Having a meetup myself, Amanda, and Chris Moore, our content director, will be there hosting it. And we're just inviting anyone in the Austin area that listens to the podcast. Please go to the show notes or go to the Quiet Light Brokerage website and then /meetup/Austin. And the Evite will be right there. Click on it. It'll give you directions and you'll get to see everybody that's coming.
Absolutely. I've seen the guest list that's already said yes. This is going to be a really, really good event. If you want to do some networking or see old friends, I know a lot of the people here already know each other. And so it should be a really good time. I'm bummed that I'm probably not going to be able to get out there. Something about leaving my wife, who we just welcomed our seventh child,
I'm
doesn't
sorry,
feel right.
how many children? I just need to do that. Go ahead.
That would be seven. That would be seven kids. And so, I'll leave eventually, but she may not want me to be gone for a couple of days having fun with everybody down in Austin.
It's work. It's not fun. It's work.
that's what I would tell her. And all of you listening are going to say the same thing if you ever meet her. He worked really, really hard.
Well, we hope everybody in the Austin area can come make it. Look forward to meeting you face to face if we haven't met already.
Not only are they going to tell you everything you need to know, but they're going to answer their own questions. And all you just have to know so little and position things. And sometimes it's just as simple as nodding your head and be like, yep, yep. And it's just answering their questions. And then they're like, you know what, Ali, I think I need to move forward with this. People do not understand the importance of subtext.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
Senator. You can have my answer now if you like. My offer is this. Nothing.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Mark, I understand that our friend John Corcoran referred someone to Quiet Light to be a guest on the podcast, Ollie Mirza. He's from Rose Garden Consulting. First of all, John, thank you very much. And if anyone else has suggestions for a great guest like Ollie, please send us an email. We'd love to have some people on that can help you grow your business or sell your business or even buy a business. Now, as I understand it, Ollie is in the SaaS world, helping people optimize that sales process, that onboarding process, which is kind of challenging and critically important in the SaaS area, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And John and Jeremy, I think they're just going to become our new podcast guest sourcing agents because they've been referring so many awesome people over that have really added to the podcast quite a bit. But Ollie comes from this traditional sales background, and he and I talk quite a bit about this because that's my background as well. When I was a teenager, my very first job was a telemarketing job. Yes, I was one of those guys. And then I also did B2B door-to-door sales for long distance optimization. I mean, talk about some of the most brutal conditions for learning basic entrepreneurship. Ollie comes from that background. He's really good at it. He's a killer salesperson. And so what he does now is he works with SaaS organizations to help optimize their onboarding processes. And how do you set up a sales team that is both free to do what they need to do? You know, not this tight like script that a salesperson has to have, but still have these processes that are repeatable and can be optimized so that you're not losing money through your onboarding process. It's the same thing as like CRO, right? Conversion rate optimization. So many people have these leaky conversion funnels, and just by optimizing those, they can increase the revenue substantially. This is the same thing with any group and any SaaS business that has an onboarding process for potential clients. So kind of an old school soul, young guy, but old school soul when it comes to the sales process, mixing it in with the online world.
I'm looking forward to listening to this one myself. Let's get to it.
Ali, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate, first of all, your patience, because I canceled this podcast on you twice, both for totally legitimate reasons. My mom's basement was flooding the first time. I was literally like outside shoveling snow when I was texting you saying, I can't make this one. And then the last time was I literally lost my voice and it's still kind of gone. But thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. Appreciate you having me.
Do me a favor and let our listeners know basically why I'm having you on the podcast. What's your story and what do you do?
So what I do, I'm still trying to figure that out half the time, but
me too.
But my story, so I got into sales when I was 19 years old. So I was the guy that would go door to door selling life insurance. Did that for 4 years, built up a team. I was the number one agent in the country and had about 50 sales reps under my belt. Things were great and all, but as a true entrepreneur, I knew that that wasn't exactly where I wanted to be for the rest of my life. And obviously I just wasn't fulfilled. Long story short, I decided to start my own company, Rose Garden. That was almost 8 years ago now. And originally we started off as kind of like a hired gun. I didn't like the bureaucracy and all that stuff that came with selling insurance. And so I just said, I'm a salesman, just let me sell. That's all I want to do. So we'd go into companies, you put us on retainer and we'd sell for you. And when we close the deal, you pay us kicker. That worked out great for a while, 2.5 years or so in. One of my clients says, this is great, but if you get hit by a bus tomorrow, we're back to square one. And I said, yeah, you're right about that. And then he said, well, why don't you write down what you do for us? I said, well, that wasn't our original engagement, so why don't you pay me for it? And so he said, yes. And that's kind of when the light bulb went off and I understood that, oh, hang on, building people's sales processes is infinitely more scalable than me actually selling for people. So that's about five, 6 years ago or so, we pivoted. And since then, we've almost exclusively been building out sales processes for companies.
That's awesome. So I actually come from that direct sales background as well. Like I cut my teeth, my very first job. Most people's first job was what, like McDonald's or something like that, right? Fast food. And I think at the age of 12 or 13, I made a promise to myself that I would never work in fast food. And so my very first job was a telemarketing position, you know, and boy, you learn pretty quickly how to deal with that. And I think probably I would put this as my worst job because I was kind of burnt out at this point. This was after about 5 years of doing telemarketing. I mean, some of the worst stuff out there too. I did door to door business, door to door telephone, long distance service sales. they would send us down. It was a team of us. We'd go down in like teams of three. And we would literally hit like a downtown area in some small town, knock on doors. Can we see your long distance bill? All this. Oh my gosh, man, that was brutal. But it was an awesome experience as far as learning how to be an entrepreneur, but also B, how to sell. Totally a great background for an entrepreneur.
Yeah, no, I mean, going door to door, that'll put some hair on your chest, right? I mean, and once you do that, I mean, you don't really fear things anymore, right? I think a lot of what holds people back as entrepreneurs is the fear of, you know, what could or what won't, realistically, what won't happen, right? If I take this risk, will it pay off? Will it break me? I don't have that anymore, right? When you have to knock on someone's door and, you know, try and sell them some life insurance, it's all inhibitions, you know, when you do that for a few years, all inhibitions are gone. You just kind of don't really care anymore.
Yeah, you learn how to laugh off the nose and actually appreciate the guys that just like in telemarketing, the best thing that we could have happen is somebody hang up on us, right? Because that's a very quick no. I can immediately get on to that next prospect. And you get kind of this cold, like, I don't care if you do that. There was one guy at the door-to-door telephone long-distance company where he actually had somebody throw a wrench at him. So that's actually a little bit more a little more aggressive. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But yeah, you're right. That puts hair on your chest. You learn very quickly to lose that fear. So, all right, today I want to talk. You do a lot of consulting for SaaS companies and helping build their sales processes. And this is obviously really important for just lowering that cost of acquisition. If you have a more efficient sales team, you're going to be signing up more people. So I want to get in that. I'm going to kind of open up with a question here that, I don't know, maybe it's a softball question, but aren't there natural born salespeople? I mean, isn't it really coming down to, and I know what you're going to answer on this, but doesn't it come down, like I did a little show prep, thanks me. Yeah. It doesn't come down to finding just those rock star salespeople.
So, I mean, so those are two different questions, right? I mean, you're so natural born salesperson, in my opinion, and my opinion is always right, of course, right? But in my opinion, there's no sense. Yeah, exactly, right? I think it was a Charles Barkley book where it was like, he's like, I may be wrong, but I doubt it. it's like, but in my opinion, there's no such thing as a born salesperson. The only thing that are born are baby boys and baby girls. Salespeople are trained. No different than there's no lawyer gene, there's no doctor gene, all these other things. There is no sales gene as much as people would like to believe. A lot of what we attribute that to is people that are just, you know, outgoing, charismatic extroverts. That's learned, that's nurture, not nature. So it's, you know, depends on external environmental factors and things of that nature of what your personality ends up to be. That doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to be a closer and you're actually going to bring money in the door, right? We know lots of extroverts that just talk and burn deals. So there is no such thing as a born salesperson. Now, looking for a rock star, that's a different thing, right? You're looking for someone that's, you may not know what you're asking for, but really what you're asking for is somebody that's already trained, that someone else has put the work into, and now you're fixing to benefit off of their work. That is more reasonable than looking for a natural born salesperson, because at that point what you're really saying is someone that doesn't have sales training but just can sell. So looking for a rock star is someone that has that sales training and you know you can bet their experience. Now, that being said, that's incredibly difficult to find, especially in today's market. I mean, you know, if you can sell, your sales is the only money side of the balance sheet, right? Everyone else is an expense. We're the only income. Right. So sales, when someone can sell, someone's picking up your company, you're not going to let them go. So good salespeople are golden handcuffed in. Of course, there's founders and companies that, you know, drop the ball with great salespeople, but the likelihood that you're going to find that person on the open market's next to none. You know, they know people that know people that, you know, they'll land on their feet pretty quick.
Yeah. I think, one of the problems I see with a lot of companies, especially as they're scaling, is the founder might have that ability to sell their product, right? But they can never really expand beyond that. And I actually had this problem with Quiet Light when I started initially. I went through, I think it was probably within the first year of Quiet Light, I went out and I hired five people that I thought were going to be really good at this, but they ended up not really working out. Some of them did a little bit, but not really. Like, they all kind of phased out. And it wasn't until Jason joined the team that I stumbled upon, I would guess in your world, the sales process, and I never really thought about it in terms of a process because we don't think about it in the same way here at Quiet Light. But I'd like to get into this a little bit as far as finding out what that process is for your company. I would imagine, depending on what you're selling and within the SaaS world specifically as well, the process is going to differ quite a bit from if you're selling, say, a $300 a month SaaS product versus, I think I just talked to somebody yesterday where his average price point is $20,000 per year with 3-year minimum commitments. So what does that process look like when you're going into an organization and you want to start to identify the characteristics of that sales process? And am I even putting this the right way? Do we talk about the sales process?
That's exactly what we do, right? The first thing, so every sales process we build is custom and unique. Now, at the surface level or at the face value after the fact, you know, there's only so many ways to skin a cat. And so I could turn around and be like, oh, you know what? Company A's sales process looks quite a bit like company B, but we can't start there, right? So we have to treat everything unique and custom from the beginning. And then it may end up looking somewhat similar to someone else's, but we arrive at that, you know, independent of that, right? We're not trying to predetermine. So our process of how we do that is, first thing we do is we do an assessment, right? So we'll actually go in there, spend a day on site and work with their sales leaders, the founders, work with the sales team and really understand everything that they're doing right that they need to continue doing, everything that they're doing wrong that they either need to stop or change, and everything that they're not doing that they need to be doing, right? And so we start at a very high level. They walk us through their process. They walk us through their typical deal flows and cycles. And so we start to really pick out things from there and bucket them into one of those three categories. And then from there, we get very granular and look at all the tactics. Then we build out a report and say, step by step, right? If I was your VP of sales, or if I was the founder of this company, or, you know, I had to build the process, this is what I would do, right? So you get a little diagnostic that basically can walk you through it step by step and helps you understand what you need to do and what you, because sometimes even if things that we're doing is right, it's just having that external validation from someone who sees it from, you know, who's seen hundreds of SaaS companies do it the right and the wrong way, right? I've seen crazy growth, right? I've seen, you know, 200-400% month over month, and I've seen, you know, 1-2% year over year, right? So you can pick out patterns pretty quick.
Yeah. So how much does that sales process change, though, from one organization to the next? I mean, for example, Quiet Light Brokerage, right? When I hired on those first five people as brokers, I took on somebody who was really good at relationship-based sales and was fine with taking that sort of long-term sort of approach. And then I also hired somebody who was the number one salesperson for QuickBooks Online, but he was much more, you know, close. He was a closer. That's what he wanted to do. And frankly, he struggled a lot, you know, and didn't really do so well. So at what point, and more specifically for the people listening here, they're thinking about the sales team that they have. How much do you look at the company? What do you look at with a company, I should ask, to start to determine, okay, this approach is right versus this approach is wrong as far as what they're doing?
I mean, you got to start with who they're selling to, right? Because even within a particular company, between the service offering, product, solution, whatever it is that they're selling, depending on which market and depending on who is buying, that sales process very well could change. So I'll give you a perfect example. One of our clients, a SaaS company, sells into the education, or is an education platform, let's call it, an online education platform that sells to large organizations. But they also have individuals, freelancers, people like, let's call them hobbyists, coming in there and buying their solution as well. So it's an online learning platform. But their goal is to sell large organizations packages and number of seats. But they also have one-offs coming in as well. So the sales process is completely unique for the one-offs and the people that are buying less than five seats, right? A small organization that has 1, 2, 3 developers, or just, you know, someone that wants to up-level their own development game, right? I'm not a developer, so I don't even know if I'm using the right terminology, but that's irrelevant.
Sounds great.
Yeah, exactly. They're sitting there coding, right? on a black screen with green color.
Just like the Matrix.
Exactly. Yeah. But the salespeople. So what we had to do with them was we had to get that stuff off the salespeople's plates, because we were paying our salespeople too much, in my opinion, to sit there and sell a, you know, $49 deal, $49 a month deal. It's pointless, right? We were losing money at that point on that sale if we had to, you know, not only pay the salesperson's salary, because there was some cost to fulfillment, right? Even though it was SaaS, and then pay them a commission off of that. And then it was just annoying the salespeople. Not only that, you got to look at opportunity cost. So what we did was we segmented them completely, because, you know, the guy that's buying 1 or 2 seats is going to ask maybe not all the questions, but he's going to ask a fair bit of the same questions that the person that we're selling 1 to 200 seats to. And I wanted my salespeople focused on that, right? So we had to segment that out. We had to change up the sales process. And there was a lot of things that we did there. So even within the organization, the sales process changes. Now, again, we had to build that unique for them, and we had to look at who's buying, what are they buying, why are they buying, how are they buying, et cetera, and reverse engineer the sales process that way. Now, you could look at that sales process and probably compare it to 10 other clients that I have and say, well, there's a lot of similarities. Well, yeah, there's only so many ways to skin a cat. But at the end of the day, if I had been like, well, who does this client remind me of? Remind me of this person. Let me bring this in here. Then you're, it's like renovating a house. I mean, yeah, you could put lipstick on a pig, but at the end of the day, it's still a pig.
Right. So how much does that sales process vary within an organization? And the concern I would have would be having a one size fits all sort of a strategy when different clients are going to be coming with different needs. So how much latitude do you give salespeople within an organization to be able to freelance that process, or even within that process at certain steps?
A lot. So here's what we do. If you don't have anything to benchmark off of, how will you ever measure success? How will you know that, you know, if you don't have a control group, you will never know whether you're picking up all the money off the table. That being said, you know, I'm not looking to handcuff and put my salespeople in a straitjacket. So we give them parameters. We tell them, here's what you need to do. And again, this what it's really used for is making sure that first 18 months of a salesperson, they have more than paid for themselves, right? after 18 months, after someone's been working, you know, selling for a year and a half at a company, they've pretty much worked most, if not all, types of deals that walk in, and they know what to do. But what I don't want is, oh, you know, this person, we say, hey, just go sell. What are they going to do? They're going to burn deals, and they're going to flush out within 6 months, right? So you have to give them something. But if it's too tight, they're not going to close, or they're going to look for ways around it. And your best salespeople, the same part of the brain that it takes to see, you know, kind of see the seams and run that route in through a sales process, the same part of the brain to get and score a touchdown is the same part of the brain that does it internally, tries to figure out, okay, how can I max out my commission? Where do I need to sandbag? What do I need to do? What levers do I need to pull to maximize it for myself? And sometimes, a lot of times, it ends up being very detrimental to the company. So don't give your salespeople enough rope where they're going to hang themselves with it. So give them a process, because they're going to go outside of that process. So anticipate that and say, hey, look, here's what a typical process looks like. You go from A, B, C, and D. Understand, though, if, you know, circumstance 1, 2, or 3 arises, this is where you can jump to. This is what you can do. This is how you can do it. And now you're starting to turn their brain, and you're designing where they can cut corners, because they're going to do it anyways. So you at least design and you account for it, opposed to, you know, figuring out in your P&L 6 months later after John's left and be like, oh shit, all of his deals are about to fall through. And, you know, we just, yeah. And then that happens all the time. As much as no one brags about that, right? None of your entrepreneur friends are going to sit around and be like, oh yeah, I just got shafted for $50,000 of commissions that I paid some guy 3 months ago, and now he's gone, and all his deals are about to fall through. I'm about to lose a lot of money. No one brags about that. Everyone brags about the logo that they closed, right? But that stuff happens all the time. I get to see it from the inside.
Yeah, absolutely. And keeping that process, you're absolutely right. Like I hated it when I was in sales, especially in telemarketing. Right? Telemarketing is really churn and burn, right? Get through as many numbers as you can. And if I did a telemarketing job and was handed a script, like, I guarantee you, I freelanced, because, you know, you hear it. We all get the calls, those annoying calls, and the person can't pronounce your name, and then they can't really even, they're tripping over the script and all that sort of stuff. And that's an extreme example, obviously, but having that looseness. Now, with a SaaS product, it's obviously, there's a certain amount of expertise that somebody has to have. How important do you see that in the process of developing a sales team to make sure that your front end people doing product demos and everything else know that product in and out? And how much emphasis should SaaS owners be putting on that part of the sales training process?
It's a fine balance, right? So here's the thing. Knowledge is ammunition, and the more ammunition you have, sometimes you might use like a tank to try and kill a mosquito. So we see that all the time, right? So you know, it's to show up and throw up, right? But on the flip side, if you don't know what you're selling, how are you going to sell it, right? So it's a fine balance. Here's the way that I like to position it, and I don't want anyone to get this confusing, but I would like to teach my salespeople everything they need to know about the product, but also more importantly is teach them how to position it is more important than teaching them what it actually does and when to bring it up and how to bring it up. Because I think that's important. And once you start explaining that, they, you know, it prevents a little bit of that throw up and show up type of thing. But on the flip side, and this, everyone's going to freak out when I say this, but you need to know this much more than the prospect in order to sell. I've sold things that I have absolutely no clue what I'm talking about. For one reason only, subtext, right? It's not what you say. Half the time, it's what you don't say, right? So if you're a really good salesperson, you don't need to know anything about anything. You just show up. I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I mean, like, my head's already big enough as it is. And as you can tell, no one's more impressed by me than me. But like, I've closed 7-figure deals not knowing what it was that I was selling. Because if you can ask the right questions, not only are they going to tell you everything you need to know, but they're going to answer their own questions. And all, you just have to know so little and position things. And sometimes it's just as simple as nodding your head and be like, yep, mm-hmm, yep. And it's just answering their questions. And then they're like, you know what, Ali, I think I need to move forward with this. It's people do not understand the importance of subtext. Most salespeople will never be able to master that. So as a result, you know, it's very important that you need to be able to teach them you need to not only teach them what the product does, but then how to position it. I think that's more important than the product knowledge itself. But, you know, if we're going to get really philosophical with it, in my opinion, subtext is far more important than anything else.
Most valuable lesson I ever learned in sales was learning how to shut up.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, and I think it was a Zig Ziglar book that I read way back in the day where he talked about that act of listening and again, just being quiet. And more importantly, not just being quiet and looking and kind of blankly not listening, but listening to what the prospect says. And then being able to simply, when you're invited at that point to respond, responding to what they actually say. And we've seen this at Quiet Light, and this is completely unintentional. Like we have a pretty soft approach with our sales process. But what I found in the past is that when I tell somebody not to sell their business, which we tell people a lot, you know, because I honestly think it's in their best interest. Oftentimes when we tell somebody not to do something, the opposite starts to happen, right? They end up becoming more determined to do it. And part of that's just dealing with entrepreneurs. We're all the smartest people in the room. And they want to do that. Okay, I have one more question for you. I have two, so we can fit two and we'll do it. But one more big question, and this is something that I find to be a problem with a lot of online service-based companies and SaaS companies, and that is the continuity between the salesperson up front and the back-end team. So pretty simple, salesperson over-delivering or over-promising what's going to happen after. Do you consult in this area at all? And how can business owners, SaaS owners look towards that continuity between their upfront salesperson who's not having to do the account management necessarily after the sale?
See, now that boils down to training, right? A lot of times, you know, let's call me an optimist in this, and I believe that most salespeople don't typically want to lie, right? And so if they know that they're lying, they'll probably shy away from it. I mean, unless you get a shady, you know, salesperson, then all bets are off type of thing. But I'd say the vast majority of salespeople don't want to lie. And it's just because you haven't taken the time to properly train them on what actually happens after the deal is done, right? So for us, it's very important to sit with customer success and really understand how, because that's really how we create the pitch. Right. So we sit with customer success. We see what people are saying, how they're saying it. We interview customers. And once we understand that, we reverse engineer the pitch. Once you give someone the pitch, you know, it's black and white what we do, what we don't do, how we do it. And if you're going off script, you know, it's very easy to call you in and be like, hey, brother, what's going on here? You know, you're supposed to say we do X, Y, and Z. Why are you saying 1, 2, 3? And then, you know, it happens a couple of times and you help them transition out. But it's, you know, you're 100% right. It's all about setting expectations on the front end from a salesperson with the prospect so that when they do become a client, it's not a problem. But you as the founder, business owner, VP, whatever, the sales leader have to also do that. You have to set expectations with the salespeople because a lot of times you're like, oh, and a lot of times this also happens. I'll be brief with this, is the founder is this visionary, delusional optimist who thinks their product is the best product since sliced bread and is pitching it that way. And the salesperson gets all jazzed, full of piss and vinegar, gets excited, says the exact same thing to a prospect. Then the prospect comes and finds out that half the widgets don't work, right? I see that all the time too. So just be reasonable.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I dealt with that with a service company recently where the salesperson, you know, showing me graphs and all these beautiful things. I'm like, this looks good. Like if they can deliver on half this. And then I got into the account management stage and there was a lot of tempering of expectations. You know, I'm
that doesn't work yet. Oh, that's on our roadmap for Q4. And
yeah, like, well, at this point, you need to just kind of sit back and just kind of wait for that's not what I saw. You know, that's not what I was told up front. What point should somebody be thinking about putting in a sales process? And I'm thinking again about really early stage people here, right? They're maybe just coming out of beta. They're starting to go out for a launch and they might be hiring one, maybe two salespeople here. When should somebody be saying, we need to start getting this process honed in?
I'd say, you know, first you sell as the founder, you need to sell. After you've sold a few and you've kind of figured out what happens, what's good, what's not good, I'd recommend hiring two salespeople, let them battle it out together, let them feed off each other, learn from each other. The goal is not, you know, the strongest survives. The goal is both of them, you know, steel sharpen steel or whatever, get that going. And before you go and hire employee number or salesperson number 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, that's when you need to start the process. So after the first two people have started to prove it out, then go from there. that's when you need to start building it out and systematizing and documenting everything. And now it makes your life so much easier after the fact. Because again, sales process is not something that you build once and that's it. It's a living, breathing document that's constantly being iterated. But you know, you need a foundation to start off of.
Yeah. How do people measure this? I mean, do you set up milestones along that sales process that you're going to be measuring, kind of like a funnel, or are you just looking at inbound and out as far as, you know, inbound calls coming in or prospects and the actual conversion rate?
I mean, it's both, right? I mean, you're doing a qualitative and a quantitative, right? So overall, I look at the quantitative just so that I can have, it's like a measuring stick, right? You know, but I really believe it's more qualitative. You got to listen to the calls, because there is no perfect closing percentage, right? And I'm always concerned when someone has too high of a close percentage and they're like, oh, I close 80% of my deals. I'm like, something's wrong there. So you're either selling it too short or you're DQing people that you shouldn't be DQing, all of this other stuff. So the quantitative will only tell you what you're prepared to understand. And what you're prepared to understand is filled in by the qualitative. So you got to listen to calls. You got to figure out, like, did we sell that for as much as we could have? Was that too easy? Was that too hard? What was going on there? You got to figure all those things out. And data can't tell you that. Data can only tell you if that improved or didn't improve. And if you're not doing the qualitative, you very likely are leaving a lot of money on the table.
Absolutely. 100%. All right. I want to talk about some of the success stories that you guys have had at Rose Garden Consulting. Because really, when you start to look at this again, I think two of the lowest areas, lowest hanging fruit areas of any business would be conversion rate optimization. And two, if you have a sales process where you have this onboarding process and you're having that customer interaction, improving that process as well, because you don't have to do any more as far as bringing in the inbound traffic. You're just optimizing what's coming in. So I'd love to know more about some of the successes that you guys have had. What are some of the things that kind of stand out in your mind as far as, you know, kind of eye-popping numbers?
One of our clients in 3 weeks, their average deal was 35K. Within 3 weeks, just changed up the process. We closed three deals at, I think, just over 70-something, and then it just kind of stayed there. So, and it was just by changing up the way that they spoke to their clients. I mean, so right there, from the qualitative standpoint, we 2X in, you know, less than a month. That was a good one. You know, one of our clients, and the case studies are online. And so one of our clients, we took from 5 million ARR to 12 million in 1 year. They were Inc. 500, fastest growing company. We've had several stories like that. But for me, you know, the numbers are great and all. But for me, it's really, I just like going in there and proving things wrong, because the best of the stories are where, hey, everything is great. We just need to go from 5 to 50 reps. And then you start to find things that, well, hey, why are we doing it this way? Hey, why are we doing it this way? And all of a sudden, you know, instead of going from 5 to 50 reps to hit their goal, we go from 5 to maybe 15 and we're hitting their goal because, you know, there was so much money on the table. So those are the ones that I really enjoy.
Yeah. Just making the existing team that much more efficient and being able to find out areas where, like you said, some of that qualitative stuff, right? They might have a high closing rate, but they're disqualifying people way too aggressively, or they're just not selling for as much as they possibly could be. It's fantastic information. Where can people learn more about you or reach out to you if they are interested in getting somebody in to take a look at their existing sales processes?
RoseGardenConsulting.com is our website. You can always email me at Ali@RoseGardenConsulting.com. Rose, like the flower. My podcast is For the Close. That's ForTheClose.com. So, you know, anywhere, shape or form, you know, hit us up. I'm always happy to help. And talking sales is my jam, so I really enjoy it. So anytime I can help, I'm always happy to.
Yeah, and a huge shout out to Jeremy and John from Rise 25. They connected us over at Traffic and Conversion. You're actually the second guest that I'm having on who they hooked me up with.
Second, how am I not the first? Yeah, you got me right in the feels there.
Well, you know what? You're not the first because I had a delay. I had to cancel on you twice.
Who was number one? Who was first?
I just talked to him yesterday, and now you put me on the spot. Let me see, who was it? Oh, the guy from Sourceify. So completely different area. He's talking about sourcing products from all over the world and manufacturing products. And fascinating, really, really smart guy. Made me feel like a complete idiot. But so hey, this is awesome.
About me.
you what I like about having you on is that you're a sales guy cut from the same cloth that I came from. And right. So that's just, I don't know. I don't know manufacturing like that other guy did. I feel like I can talk more with you. Although you know like infinitely more than I do about setting up these sales processes. And I appreciate you coming on, sharing some of this information. I think you and I probably could have talked for a full hour just because I could talk about sales forever. I think it's fascinating. But yeah, thanks for coming on.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for having me, brother. Appreciate it.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light Content Team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.